Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, January 10th, 2013. This week I will continue the topic I started last week, which is how big is a comet? And I did some cursory surface analysis last week, but there's a lot more detail. And so last week I did give some specific examples regarding Mars, regarding Earth, regarding Comet 2012-S1. And this past week, I think the disinformation crew had been waiting until the end of the all of the 2012 end of the world misinformation ended. But they are in full force now, and this is leading up into the, reaching up into the layers of military and other misinformation, layers of high-level, what I'd call Tier 1 science, and dropping down into Tier 2 levels, a lot of misinformation about asteroids and potential Earth-asteroid encounters, all kinds of misinformation being released this past week. And what's the significance of that? Well, if they put a lot of stress on asteroids and asteroid collisions, and gee, NASA has secret missions going out there. I bet Bruce Willis is even on one of them, going to save the Earth, going to blow up this asteroid. It even gave me the thought that this asteroid they've been talking about, February 15th, 2013, that's called DA14, an asteroid that's supposed to come within 16,000 kilometers of Earth. But now, the military, certainly with their computer systems, can calculate the gravitational effect of the moon, Earth. And let me just explain a little bit about what happens here. The asteroid would be coming in at kind of an angle to our orbit, and as it approaches Earth, gravitational field and that of the moon pulls on this object. And so what happens when an object increases in speed? It's accelerated and increases in speed. It goes up into a higher orbit. Well, when it goes up into a higher orbit, it slows down and drops back. So it's a very complicated gravitational dance that occurs between a planet and an asteroid, or in any two objects out there that are gravitationally linked together. But I'm surprised that, given that this is just about a month away, a little over a month away, they are still not announcing anything. Certainly, there are two factors here. One is good data, taking measurements of this object and its velocity, its position, and certainly by now they've had boatloads of data. Then to calculate Earth and the gravitational field and effects of Earth and our moon. But anyway, I'll get into a lot of this detail later. The simple answer is that they should have much better information for the public at this point. But here is what I have started to imagine, is that, okay, why did they put this out in February? And this is supposed to be coming by in February. Could it be, and this is just speculation, it's actually wild speculation at this point, but when I saw the article that NASA has two secret missions that they have sent out to this, high top secret missions to destroy this asteroid, I'm wondering if this is all phony baloney, and the movie, Apocalypse, or what was it? Armageddon with Bruce Willis. And I had the misfortune of seeing this movie recently on TV on like a cable channel. And I thought, you know, I've never seen this movie. I'm just going to sit and watch it. And oh, my goodness, the glory days, the NASA and the kids playing with the space shuttle and the military flyover at the end and the guy Bruce Willis risks his life, loses his life, and saves the planet. And I think that they're pulling this off now for the glory days of NASA. NASA needs a boost. Plus, it gives the full story of asteroid danger to Earth. Why the diversion of information about asteroids? Because people don't have the time or wherewithal to think about the real issues, which are comets. In this comet 2012, S1, they're saying, yeah, maybe next October, but don't really look until November and December. In other words, don't worry about this thing coming by Mars next September, late September, early October. Don't look at it then. All of the information I've seen to date stresses the don't even look at it until into October. So they don't want people looking at this. But believe me, all of my listeners will be well informed where to look. And just to give you a preview, it'll be in the eastern morning sky. We'll have a beautiful moonless, no moon sky. So it'll be nice and dark with the comet sitting just above the red planet Mars in the early morning sky. And the closest approach will be October 1st, but it could start to connect electrically with Mars and giving amateur astronomers with somewhat moderate to good equipment looking through telescopes at Mars would give them a good view of potentially auroras on Mars, storm activity on Mars, hurricanes, dust storms on Mars that would not normally be there. So at any rate, I'll talk more about that. But so I'm going to continue this topic because it's very important. It's very, very detailed. By the way, I'm not sure if it's posted right now, but look at my webpage. The first of my ebooks is coming out, and this will give me a whole new avenue, whole new venue for releasing material. The first book, thanks to some help from some friends, is The Diamond Principle. And there were a lot of reasons for starting with that book in e-format. So, and we chose PDF format because it can be read on Macs, PCs, on many telephones, all of the various readers that the Kindles, etc., out there can read PDFs. So it's really the most versatile form to send in. And also we have accomplished one of the difficult parts, and that is the ebook security part of that. And so there are many commercial and publicly available, I should say, methods for protecting books. But what I did is opted for my own method of protecting ebooks and marking them so that when a person orders, and 99.9% of the people out there are honest, they want their version, and they want to read it and keep it in e-format. But then there's that those people that don't like me very much. And, you know, I got to say, got to report, I did not get my Christmas card from NASA this year. And once again, I'm very disappointed, but I'm starting to already put my stocking up by the mantel place in hopes that next year NASA will send me my Christmas card. But nope, I did not get it this year. Maybe they're busy saving the world, or I'm not sure. But anyway, the purpose of having security on my ebooks is number one, so that people don't mail it around or whatever, so that if we catch somebody doing that, it'll be easy to determine who the culprit is. And like I say, 99% of the people, and these are inexpensive enough that it's not worth somebody stealing or passing them off to friends. It's just not worth it. So the vast majority of people, like I say, will buy their ebook, keep it, and treasure it. But then there's the that other element, that third element of the government disinformation people who don't like me. And in that case, it's a protection against them trying to alter my material. And so the ebooks are only available on my website. They're not going to be available on Amazon or any of those other places. It'll be only available on my website. And this is another way of determining who's ordering and who might be the culprit if some, let's say, some malicious use takes place with my ebooks out there. And by the way, I had a lot of this ready and set up to activate before Christmas this past year, but with all the 2012 end of the world stuff going on, I was just a little overprotective in letting my books out in e-format so that somebody could not take them, alter them, and put them in some kind of crazy cult group. And, you know, people commit suicide. And by the way, there were no suicides. I think there was certainly a lot of implication that there would be, given the NASA stories, that they just didn't think they were going to be able to stop the suicides out there. All of that I announced on my shows. But I didn't want my ebooks out there to allow anybody in that kind of critical period leading up to right before Christmas time last year to play any tricks, so to speak. So anyway, now we're starting to release, so my entire group of books should be available in e-format here shortly. And if they're not on the webpage right now, the book The Diamond Principle, they're available to download in e-format. So anyway, that's a big major step for me, because all of my books for many years have been in print only and certainly only available on my webpage. So at any rate, look for that. Let's see. This coming Monday night, I will be first hour guest on the Coast to Coast AM show with host George Norrie. And I got a call about a week ago. Producer Tom Danheiser wanted me on the show, and I wasn't able to be. So they set up Monday, coming up this Monday, and specifically wanted me there this coming Monday. So listen for that coming Monday, January 15th. First hour, Coast to Coast AM, I'll be the guest there talking about my work and some of the things that I'll be presenting to the public in the coming year, coming months. Now, in the past, I had made some predictions regarding Comet 2012-S1. And just a second, I'm making a note on my show notes here. Okay, Comet 2012-S1, I said there is a possibility, kind of a long shot, but a possibility that coming up here, January 15th, and these are somewhat complex interactions, but the Comet C2012-S1, which is, by the way, out around the orbit of Jupiter right now, is coupling with Earth right about now. We are moving into its sunward side electron beam that comes out from the sun. It's part of the plasma discharge comet model. And that's a long, long ways away for a comet to affect a planet. That is really a long ways. I mean, we're talking about from Jupiter to Earth. Now, we have seen Jupiter affect Earth. We've seen about 15 years ago, there was a story that the military put out, the U.S. military. It was called Killer Electrons from Jupiter. And we passed between Jupiter and the sun and got a big blast of electrons. They talked about the amount of energy in this blast of energy that hit Earth. and was detected by military satellites, and they were wondering where this came from. And that's why, by the way, the military, the black ops, the tier one scientists have learned a lot from my work, because they actually came out and talked to me. There was a gentleman that called me up, and then we had a long discussion about weather, about hurricanes, about all kinds of other things. But I said, yeah, that's the electron beam on the Jupiter, on the sun side of Jupiter, and we got caught up in it a little bigger than normal. And that's when I also explained to them about the Jupiter winds. And so right now we have just passed Jupiter as far as that alignment. But the comet is coming up, comet C2012S1, that electrical alignment. We are talking about January 15th. And remember that these are not perfect exact alignments, because these plasmas kind of snake around. There are other factors, so to speak. But here is a factor that is major in this whole alignment of Earth and the comet. On January 11th, we have the new moon. Now, 2 days later, it's what I call the new moon passing. It's when the new moon passes from between Earth and the sun, releases that blocking factor that it's doing, blocking the solar wind, it's acting as a comet out in front of the Earth, and it breaks away, and all of a sudden the solar wind that was being blocked and harbored by that new moon, it breaks away and comes crashing in and compresses our local plasma magnetic field, including the Van Allen belts and our plasma magnetic field, which is about 35,000 miles out from Earth on the sunward side. The moon, of course, is about 250,000 miles away, 250,000 miles away, about almost 10 times, about 8 times as far. And so that solar wind comes crashing in, compresses our plasma magnetic field, which interacts with our upper ionosphere and can compress down and trigger storm activity down in the troposphere. So could we see around the 13th of January some unscheduled harsh weather, including hurricanes in the Atlantic? We could see hurricanes in the North Atlantic now. Is this possible? Remember that, number one, there is a factor that this comet is very far away. For that to transcend all the way to Earth, connecting its sunward spike of electrons, the electrons, remember, are flowing out from the sun to the comet. They're not coming from the comet. They're going to the comet. So that's a long shot. That's a long shot, because this comet is relatively small. Also, the solar wind, the solar cycle, is a very weak solar cycle. The sun is not at the energetic state that it should be, given where we are in ramping up in this solar cycle. So the sun is not providing a lot of help here. And then the new moon passing is that trigger mechanism that could trigger this off. And so I would say there are two factors that will solidify my prediction. And by the way, the prediction is it's somewhat tentative. It's like a prediction, and it's something to look for, but it's not something I would certainly not put 100% on it. I'd put maybe a 10 to 20% possibility on this happening. But the two things we would have to see for this to be verified is, number one, auroras on Earth, unusually strong auroral activity, especially the electron auroras. That's a little bit different than the proton auroras, so we would to see that. And also possible severe weather down in the troposphere, that lower-lying weather, what we call our weather zone, the lower part of the Earth's atmosphere where we see weather, typhoons in the Pacific, or possibly a heating of the Pacific, the El Nino effect, or possibly hurricane activity in the Atlantic. but also coupled with this, in other words, the also besides Earth weather and aurora activity that we might see, we would have to see a significant brightening of the comet, suggesting that, yes, it was that connection, the comet-Earth connection, which caused our weather auroras and caused the comet to brighten at that stage. Now, if the comet brightens, NASA is going to have to scramble for an explanation. And so it's very predictive where they're when they reach into their rabbit's hat to pull out the magic rabbit, that they will say that an asteroid hit the comet, because that's their only bag of tricks. And for this, I want to refer back to Comet Holmes. And I have a subpage on my homepage, the Comet Holmes subpage. There I predicted that there would be Earth and comet activity when Comet Holmes, on October 23rd, 2007, Comet Holmes had an exact electrical alignment, very unusual alignment, with Mercury, Venus, and Mars. And it was relatively close back out on the far side of Mars at that time. And I made that prediction, and that's when Comet Holmes went ballistic, became the largest comet ever to be recorded in history, was visible in the night sky about the size of the full moon, and of course NASA came up with the with the absurd fairy tale explanation that an asteroid must have hit it. But what a stupid explanation, because this continued on for weeks and weeks and weeks. Certainly not something that would be caused by a simple asteroid collision. But at any rate, I'm just mentioning this because we've seen these in the past. Comet Holmes was a good example. And by the way, as I said, I have a subpage on my homepage, jmccsci.com, where you will be able to read all of the details. So if you want to go back to that 2007 era, where Comet Holmes exploded into brightness on October 23rd, exactly as I predicted, and NASA comes along and says, oh, an asteroid must have hit it. Those guys, I guess if they get paid, that's their only satisfaction. But how absurd, how absolutely absurd. But here we come, Comet 2012 S1. We're coming up on January 13th is actually the new moon passing. So the fireworks could start as early as around then or a little bit before then. But because the comet, remember, is on our tail side, our non-sunward side. So that could begin interacting with Earth. It could be already interacting with Earth, giving us some weather activity. But, so anyway, as a summary, it could be starting in a few days. So the 13th would be Saturday. Saturday sometime during the day, that new moon passing. The 11th is tomorrow, the 11th, the new moon. The actual new moon, so the new moon passing would be around late Friday, sometime Saturday, where this could kick in and trip that plasma effect in the Earth's upper atmosphere and extend anywhere out through Monday, somewhere there. You know, this could possibly translate into large winter storms up in the northern states of the United States or in Europe, in Russia. So there could be or it could translate into typhoons in the South Pacific. As I said, an El Nino effect, a rapid heating of the Pacific Ocean, or hurricanes in the Atlantic. Any of those Earth effects plus auroras, unusual auroras. And remember that the electron auroras look different than the proton auroras. So if we saw those electron auroras, that would be another good indicator. And by the way, there is a small chance that we could have kind of a double effect here, where we could connect into Jupiter again and the comet, because they're relatively close out there in the night sky. At any rate, that's something to look for. I'll be reporting on that in next week's show, of course, and also hopefully on my webpage. But anyway, just to summarize, we need to see two things happening in this effect. The Earth effects, the severe weather, the El Nino, heating of the Pacific Ocean, the upper atmospheric aurora conditions on Earth, and that means simultaneously at the same, simultaneously the comet brightening. And so it'll be interesting to see if those two observables are noted, then in fact we can certainly say that this was the first real major connection between Comet C2012 and a planet. And so if that kicks up the comet in brightness, that means by the time it works its way into Mars by next October 1st, then that could be a much stronger interaction simply due to the fact that this comet interacted with Earth at this time. And of course, remember that none of this, absolutely none of this, is on the radar when you see information coming out of standard science. In fact, as I will point out here shortly, all of the information coming from standard science today is about asteroids. They're just barraging the public and from all directions with asteroids. In fact, as I said, the movie Armageddon with Bruce Willis, and it's a pretty hokey movie, pretty non-realistic. But at the end, glory days of NASA, the military, and, you know, make the Russian guy look stupid type of things. Real bad Hollywood. To me, it's a bad, a B Hollywood movie with a capital B for bad. But the end result is the glorification of NASA and the military and the government programs, that somehow they're going to save the world. And that's why I have to repeat with this asteroid DA14, I just wonder if this is just another well-documented, well-planned disinformation program where NASA goes out secretly, two missions, saves the world, and actually nothing ever happened. There was no danger. There was no comet or asteroid to blow up, and there was never any danger, but as in the movie Armageddon, the asteroid moves by Earth, and the whole world sees, and glory to NASA for saving the world. And it would sure give NASA a boost, especially in the wake of Obama cutting their dollars, their funding. And so they're desperate for something, and I just can see this. I can smell this like a bad rotten fish somewhere out there in the marketplace. Okay, so enough of that. Just a quick note here. I talk many times about what I call the myth of alternative energy. This past week, I should have announced this at the beginning of the show in the announcements, but we kind of have a break between topics here. Apple Computer, the Apple company, has announced a patent, something extremely unusual, in that they are patenting a wind technology. And so when I saw this, I thought, oh, this must be revolutionary for Apple to patent something dealing with wind energy technology. And then I looked at it and then thought, oh my goodness, these people can't be serious. And so anyway, here is what the invention shows. The patent shows a wind turbine with three blades, the most inefficient process on the planet for trapping wind. But it shows that instead of it directly driving a electrical generator, one of the big criticisms of wind power is that it's variable, the same way with solar power, or basically any other form of alternative energy, just about, is that it's variable. It changes with time, and so the power companies have to adjust standard power sources to augment, diminish, and so you might have gusty winds where you get a burst of energy and then 2 seconds later there's none. So at any rate, what they're suggesting is that you heat up with mechanical spinning devices. You heat up a big pool of some type of liquid, and they're suggesting various types of liquid. And then, okay, you store the energy in heat in a very big insulated tank. Then that heat can be used to generate turn turbines, which would then generate electricity. But here is the problem, and once again, this is tier two science all the way, the garbage science, and it's a perfect example of alternative energy, green energy, that has no possibility of succeeding. Here's the situation. You've added a very inefficient process in the middle of an already inefficient process. Wind generation at best is around 20%. This is at best. This is at peak performance. Wind generation is only about 20% efficient. And I would call into question those calculations and numbers. But at any rate, then you have to transmit this over long distances. So by the time you get done, the amount of energy that actually gets to the wall plug is very small, 5% if you're lucky, of the actual wind-generated energy from the wind tower, and that is only 20% efficient. So, I mean, it's a horribly inefficient process. Now, Apple wants to patent a process by which they put another inefficient process in the middle. This would be what they call a Carnot cycle, which in theory is maybe around 35% efficient, but in reality is around 20% efficient if you're lucky. Okay, so they would then take the variable wind energy, drop it into a heated liquid. The heated liquid then would be would drive turbines. And I would say, too, that the idea of storing energy and then releasing it from a heated container, second of all, you're going to have a lot of heat loss unless you build some kind of really amazing storage container, and that costs money. This would have to be underground, so to add to the already incredible expense of building a wind tower, now you're supposed to build an underground tank full of liquid, have this move into a heat exchange system, which takes heat energy, moves it through a Carnot cycle, and then turns a turbine at about 20% efficiency. You've taken a 5% efficient process overall and put in a 20% inefficient process in the middle, so now you're getting 0.2 of the 0.05. So you're down to around 1% efficiency by adding this. So you really haven't gained anything. So I get a kind of a funny reaction out of reading the blogs that come at the end of these. People are going, oh, isn't this amazing, amazing technology? But I want to read the comment of one blog entry here from a guy named Charlie Potatoes. And thank you, Charlie, for... he doesn't have really a thermodynamics explanation, but it's kind of a general public reference to what might be a thermodynamics explanation. Charlie Potato's comment here says, "It makes me worry that Apple is unsophisticated enough to chase the myths of green energy. All such concepts produce at least 10 times the release of heat into the environment as that of simply burning fuel at the wheels. Please check where the wall plugs are in these magical schemes." And that's a very good public common sense for the general public way of stating what I've been saying here, too, is that this is just an absolutely ridiculous idea. And remember that these ideas are promoted because, guess what, Apple will probably get a lot of money from investors, stupid investors out there that are going to stick their money in this, hoping to get some kind of payback. But the end result will be a 5 to 10 year program where nothing happens, and after the end of that, they will write some articles about how inefficient it was and how it really didn't succeed, and when those articles should be written right now. What an absurd concept to put a 20% at best efficiency process in the middle of an already weak 5% efficient process, to transfer of energy and exchange and changing energy forms is very inefficient just by its very nature. So at any rate, back to the drawing board there, but it's unfortunate these ideas get promoted and put out in the public eye. Okay, since there is so much misinformation this week on comets, asteroids, I wanted to go through these just to let you know, it's so much misinformation, it's mind-boggling, but somebody is very busy at work here creating this misinformation, and obviously they are preparing big time for this year, 2013. I've already heard that some people are predicting that in May, June, there's going to be some asteroids hitting Earth. But I'm going to go down the laundry list of things that have just come out in the last 2 weeks. I've already talked about the BBC, both radio and television, and news blitz, webpage blitz, that the Christmas star was a planetary alignment. Now, why, you know, I've said before, and for many years I've given my Christmas lecture, not so much this year, I just kind of gave a brief summary, but I've had specials where I've been a guest on many hours of radio talking about the Christmas star being a comet, a very special comet, but the major news media keeps bringing in professional astronomers who say, oh, it was just a planetary alignment. And so that's the official story. Why do they not want the public to understand what it really was, that it was a comet? Because they don't want the public thinking anything about comets, that it was related to historical events, that something major happened. There was something very unusual about that comet that set it apart from all other comets, so that the Three Kings, by the way, this past Monday was Three Kings Day, the celebration, and the comets, they don't want people thinking that the Christmas star that the Three Kings followed was a comet. So at any rate, then if you look at the end day prophecies, they talk about signs in the heavens, looking up and seeing the signs in the heavens. So they don't want you knowing what those signs are, that it'll be related to a large comet. The damage control that's been going on regarding C-2012-S1 and ignoring the Mars encounter. I've seen a lot of articles. If I have time at the end of this show, I want to go through line by line through the one particular article dealing with comet C-2012-S1. And it just filled with standard tier two garbage fairy tale science. And I'm sorry to bore you with this, but it's very important because the public is absolutely being barraged by this misinformation. There was an article that came out this week, and in fact, I pulled the picture from this article and I posted it on my webpage. And it shows an artist's conception of what has been measured with some radio telescope facilities. And what they're doing is looking at distant stars. I think this one was around 45 light years, so not that far away. Or was it 450? I don't remember offhand, but a relatively close star. But it had a circular or spherical dust gas cloud around it, and then there was another gas cloud in closer to this particular star, and there was a streamer on both sides coming into the inner sphere of dust and gas from the outer sphere. And on a scale of 1 to 100, the inner sphere of gas around the star, which, by the way, would have been equivalent to about the orbit of Saturn in our solar system. So, you know, outside of the orbit of Saturn was one of these dust clouds. And then way far away, about probably on a scale of 0 to 100, the inner ring would be at around 5, and the outer ring would be at about 100, just to give you somewhat of the scale. And then way down in the center would be the central star. And, of course, the light from the central star is illuminating those clouds, giving off light, allowing the astronomers to measure their existence. But between, from the bigger outer cloud, were streamers coming into the inner cloud. They could see clumps in there, indicating that there were planets forming in that region. Now, this is totally contradictory to the standard explanation, where a cloud of dust and gas swirls, and in that local region, the planets supposedly form by gravity, a concept which does not work at all. There's a whole laundry list of faults to it, the biggest being that as these planets supposedly coalesce, the outer part of the ring moves slower in orbit around the star than the inner part of the ring, so all of the planets would spin in a counterclockwise direction, in a clockwise direction, and the reality is, in our solar system, all of them spin in a counterclockwise direction. So the spin of the planets comes out all wrong, just one of the most basic properties of planets. But now they adopt exactly what I have been saying because of this observation, and I have been saying all along, that the comets, great comets, form the planets. And in the early stages of the solar system, the major planetary formation was going on from drawing in this material from the outer, what I call, donut nebula cloud. And so all of what I have been saying is actually been verified 100% true, absolutely 100% accurate. But now NASA and the boys and the standard science boys look at this and say, oh, this is due to gravity. This is due to gravity. And what an absurd concept, because the idea of a small gravitationally bound planet, gravity is a very, very weak force and by no means can channel or tunnel this material in these comet-type structures that they're showing. The thing that electrical forces have, it's not just electrical forces, it's plasma flow in electrical fields. And once these start, they tend to channel in very consolidated streamers. Part of the process is that the self-induced magnetic fields pull these together. Gravity doesn't do that. And so what you're seeing are definitely electrical effects. Go to my webpage to see the picture, the jmccsci.com webpage, to see the picture of this. And you'll see that my commentary there also is that over these great distances, gravity simply does not work the same as electrical conditions. Gravity does not have any ability to pull clouds together like we see here. Electric does. Gravity doesn't work over those long, long distances. Gravity is a very weak force. It would only work in very localized situations and would not work over the vast areas of outer space that you're seeing in these pictures. But this is what I call the creeping crud. The standard science basically taking my ideas, changing them, adding that tier two fairy tale science, only gravity part of the story, and then publishing it. These get immediately published. For example, that one is being published in the journal Nature. And I make the comment on my homepage that these articles are rubber stamp published. There's no peer review. Peer review is when critical analysis is given on articles. And for example, this article should have had calculations on gravity and its effect over those immense, enormous distances of outer space and how gravity is doing this amazing tunneling of material, of and it's just absolutely absurd that these articles get published with no real peer review. But this is all part of Tier 2 science. It's the good old boy clubhouse, and they just publish what they want. And there's no real peer review. If someone really were peer reviewing these articles, they would make them go back and do their homework, and the article would never be published, because they couldn't show, in theory, how a gravitational object, say the size of Saturn, is somehow pulling in material gravitationally from hundreds of times its orbital distance. It just doesn't happen. It's not there. So at any rate, that's just one of the other articles trying to dissuade the concept of comets. And of course, the end result is that comets form planets. You know what I've been saying all along. So they have to dispel all of these scientific concepts to save the, and they don't talk about these being a comet. They talk about them being planetary formation by gravity, and therefore they claim proving their gravitational collapse concept of planet formation, which of course doesn't work. It doesn't explain where water comes from on a planet, because the heat of formation, once the planet forms, it's going to boil off any water. So then how do you get the water back down to the planet? And then they say, well, a comet came along and crashed into Earth. But then they look at the material in a comet, and most of it formed near the sun. And supposedly, according to standard theory, it formed out at the edge of way beyond in something called the Oort cloud, something that is not detectable by any type of standard standard astronomical equipment. Okay, now to go through the asteroid articles that have come out this week. And of course, just a quick commentary that these are ignoring what I call action at a distance. The ability of large comet-type objects coming by Earth and affecting us at a distance. The only thing they want to acknowledge is that something could crash into Earth, and really the reality of that is pretty minimal. Although this object DA14 might be real. I'm just saying that I'm just starting to smell a rotten fish in Denmark when they started releasing these articles that somehow a secret NASA program has been sent out to move this asteroid away. And at the same time, our well-paid, well-fed disinformation plant, Phil Plate, is at the TED conference telling how NASA has the ability to blow up asteroids and save the world. So all of this misinformation, one being leaked at the TED conference, another being leaked through supposedly intelligence agencies leaking information to the public through secret venues, and believe me, if this were really secret, they wouldn't be talking about it at all. That's why these leaks, these so-called information leaks coming from various points of news releases, is very telling. It tells me that Phil has been watching too many Hollywood movies lately. And of course, these are old stories. There's nothing new about what they're saying here. They're just saying that, gee, NASA has this ability now, and who better to do that than the NASA outreach disinformation spokesperson but Phil. And so it comes at a time which is very unusual, because, as I said, often the other side, supposedly these information intelligence agencies, are saying that there's two NASA missions going out to this asteroid to try and blow it up or do whatever. And by the way, that's a really, really bad idea, because now you don't have one asteroid coming in to collide with Earth. You got maybe a dozen of them coming in, crashing in. So you got a shot coming in, whereas before it would have hit one place. The other thing is the estimates for these have been very much overestimated. There's a lot of energy coming in, but most of that is absorbed locally. most of that energy is translated into energy at the local site, and the concept that this somehow spreads all over the world and destroys everything. In fact, it would be interesting to see a good hit on Earth. Just from a scientific point, I hope it doesn't happen, but if it does, it would give us a real-world view of this and see if the computer calculations are being overestimated. And that's what I've been saying all along, is I believe that those computer calculations where an asteroid hits Earth and burns the whole Earth flat, I believe that that's a lot of misinformation and a lot of hype caused by misguided computer calculations because the assumption is that all of that energy goes into the atmosphere and spreads around the world. And the reality is that energy is absorbed locally. Most of that energy is absorbed locally, and sure, there's a spray of rocks, etc., that comes out of it. But the point is that most of that is absorbed locally. And if it hits the ocean, of course, it would cause a tidal wave. But the other thing that I found interesting about all of the information I've seen on DA14 is they're saying they don't know where this is going to hit. Now, the Earth spins at a very known rate. This satellite is coming in, the military computers should be turning, getting out information, and it should be very, very clear at this point where that thing is going to hit, and they don't want to tell anybody, which bothers me, because say it was going to hit in the Atlantic Ocean. You would want all the people on the seaboard, eastern seaboard of the United States, to clear out. You would say, hey, take a vacation, fill your gas tank with gas, drive inland, and everybody else try and help them out. Or if it were going to hit in central Russia, you might have a plan for everybody. If we're going to hit in China, if we're going to hit in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, you would want people to head for high ground on the Hawaiian Islands and the Aleutian Islands up in Alaska, the West Coast cities of the United States, including Los Angeles. You would want these to clear out. So the fact that they're not telling us where this thing would hit, certainly when it comes by, we're going to know what side of the Earth is facing that object. Minimally, they should be telling us that. The hour would tell us, and we know the direction it's coming from. Where is this thing supposed to hit Earth, if it's going to hit Earth? All of that information should be public information, and it's not. And this makes me think, too, that this whole buildup of NASA going out to save the world type of thing is all phony baloney, because then they could say, NASA hit it, it's changed its orbit, and now it's going off this way, NASA saved the world. Now we have to put up with NASA for the next 50 years again, because they saved the world. But in reality, it's like them going to the moon. Who is going to challenge that NASA really blew this thing up and moved it? It's just a cover story. It's all phony baloney. And as a scientist, here's the thing. I mean, could NASA do this? Who knows? But is there second, third independent verification that this is going on? No. It's only NASA saying that they did it. Do you trust NASA? No, I don't. I don't trust them as far as I could spit into a hurricane wind. So I think this is all what I'm seeing and what I'm smelling is with the fill plate at TED, with the announcement, this DA-14 asteroid out there, with the announcement, the so-called leak announcement, that the NASA has sent two secret missions out there to do a Bruce Willis type of save the world type of thing. All of this tells me disinformation, like big flashing neon signs. I saw another article about making an asteroid into a lunar orbiter. And so what's that all about? Don't we have enough hungry people on this world that need things before we make an asteroid into a lunar orbiting rock? And why would you do that? Because nobody has the ability in government to go out there and do anything with it. If you did that, the amount of misinformation coming out of standard science and being printed today is just incredible. And it's really, on the surface, you'd think, oh, some people are not tuned to this would think, oh, this is amazing science. But the reality is it's just pure, I guess put your hip boots on, you know what I mean. There's another article out about an Earth-threatening asteroid in the year 2029. That'll give them a lot of press for the next, 17 years or so. And there's nothing to that. They don't have the ability to talk about things out 17 years in advance. And a good example is DA-14. They don't have the ability to predict this thing a month in advance. So what are they talking about 2029 for? It's just absurdity. Someone emailed me asking if NASA could really do this. And I think it was kind of a ploy to get me to talk about asteroids on my show. So let me explain this on my show, that the real issue is comets, large comets. That's always been the issue. Most likely was the demise of the dinosaurs. It was obviously, definitely the demise of the Holocene period, when it changed, we had glaciation all over the Earth. The mastodon saber-toothed tiger species died off, etc. And the comet issue, Planet X issue, where Planet X is a large comet, and we have a large comet coming into the solar system right now that could really put on a show and show us for sure what these things really look like. So you can see the level of misinformation that's coming out of the standard science community being released in all directions. One is to minimize the concept of comets and what they are all about. Don't look at they're putting all the wrong dates for people to look at Comet C2012-S1. And then they're barraging people with all kinds of misinformation about asteroids. Remember, go to the webpage, www.jmccsci.com, and hopefully the new book, ebook, will be there. And if you've already bought the hard copy, pick up the ebook and tell your friends about that. But at any rate, I'll be talking, and my concentration this year is space weather and the effects on planet Earth. So we have a very large body of material to cover. Hopefully this, between the misinformation, you can tell what is really important going on today. And just remember all the other products on my webpage: the recalendar Sunstar clock, the modular filter, the pre-filter, all of the books and DVDs. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.